All right, it is the Sing Second podcast. I am John Schofield. Joining me is Chris Cervello from the great class of 99. We have a great pod for you this month. We are just coming out of Women's History Month, but that doesn't mean that we're done honoring the people who help the Naval Academy, the Naval Academy Midshipmen, and the Naval Academy Athletic Programs. We are really excited this week to talk to Jen Donahoe from the great class of 94. Jen checks a lot of boxes. Local alumni-owned business. She is the co-owner of Mills Fine Wine and Spirits in downtown Annapolis. She is also a female grad, went out there and did amazing stuff as a surface warfare officer before getting out. We talked to her a little bit about that. And she is also a dual grad married person. I could have found any number of ways to say that better, Chris, and I just didn't know how to do it.
That was poetic.
Dual grad married person. What I'm trying to say is that Jen is a grad, her husband is a grad. They're both from the class of 1994. Jen and Jerry Donahoe, really, really great people, friends of the pod, friends of mine and yours personally, Chris. And I talk about them as a way of segueing into the very first segment of this pod, which is the arrival of Shipmate magazine should be coming this week. On the cover is our friend and yours, Yvette Davids, the new superintendent of the U.S. Naval Academy. Really happy to feature her on the cover of Shipmate. Shout out to Spencer Jones on the communication staff here, who took this photo of Vice Admiral Davids just looking incredibly thrilled on the day of her taking command, so to speak, at the U.S. Naval Academy. Shout out to Spencer Jones, who literally just left our staff. I'm going to embarrass him right here and say that he is a huge part of our success at the U.S. Naval Academy Alumni Association and Foundation. And ladies and gentlemen, we're also going to talk to women's golf coach at the Naval Academy, Kylie Sullivan. She's a Broncos fan, which makes her an amazing person, but she's also a coach, mentor, and a leader for these young women playing sports at the Naval Academy, a new sport. Women's golf that is already off to a great start. But first things first, Chris Cervello, a good weekend for us. Orioles baseball returned, got a couple of wins, won the series. You and I were able to enjoy opening day with fellow alumnus Jason Salata. And then a really good weekend for Naval Academy sports. But we're going to start where it's most important for you, the Baltimore Orioles. What did you think of this opening series?
Great, great set of festivities on Thursday. The entire town, excited not only for baseball season, but there's a new owner in Baltimore. I think the city needed it after the week that it had with the Key Bridge accident. And, kudos to Governor Moore and the Maryland leadership in recognizing the heroes that were on the bridge. And then I saw on Saturday, the game that you and your family went to, they recognized the dive and salvage crew that not only helped with the search and rescue, but the recovery operation, after it was determined that there were the folks they were looking for were indeed lost. So really, great baseball, great for the city of Baltimore and really the whole state of Maryland. So, it's not directly related to the Naval Academy, but I'm biased. I was a Marylander. I always felt like so went the environment in Maryland, as did the Naval Academy. And so I think this is, it's good for Baltimore. It's good for Navy as well.
Yeah, it's a huge story around here, and I know that it wasn't, any small story for you in Florida, having grown up here and having gone across that bridge so many times. I do want to put a shout out to Class of 81's Paul Hankins. Paul is a civilian employee of the Navy Supervisor of Salvage and Diving in the Office of the Director of Ocean Engineering. He is playing a distinct part in the current recovery from the Francis Scott Key Bridge disaster. He also played a major role in other operations, including the June search and recovery of the imploded submersible Titan. So, the Navy is playing a role in this recovery. U.S. Naval Academy graduates are playing a role in this recovery. You know, Governor Moore, you know, has certainly shouted it from the mountaintops, and President Biden has done it as well to talk about how important this is, you know, for infrastructure, for our economy. And I know, Chris, on the Cava Ships podcast, you guys talked to, I believe it was Derek Miller about this. You know, let's put a pin in it before we get to Jen Donahoe's interview. But, you know, this is, I think right when you and I became PAOs was when the Minnesota bridge disaster took place. And the Navy took, right, you know, it took a big role in that as well. But these kind of things don't happen all that often, you know, and I don't know if we're necessarily seeing the second and third order effects of this disaster yet. You know, the port being essentially closed, working around the clock to try to open it, bringing in these incredibly impressive pieces of equipment to, like, you know, exothermically, like, blaze through all of this twisted metal. Talk to us a little bit about how Derek Miller contextualized this in terms of the greater naval, you know, mission of keeping, you know, trade moving.
Well, yeah, I mean, John, you bring up a good point. We were lucky to talk to Derek, and Derek is from the American Association of Seaports. And, you know, what we talked about was, I mean, obviously it's no surprise to anybody on this show that seaborne trade is huge to the United States. It's huge to the reason that we have a Navy and naval professionals. We talked a lot about, okay, now what? The port is closed. Baltimore, up until the time of the Key Bridge accident, was the largest port in America by volume. What happens to that traffic? And very quickly, we find out that it heads south, it heads north. So Carnival Cruise Lines immediately went to the Port of Virginia in Norfolk, as did a number of the tankers that were waiting to offload outside of Baltimore. You've seen the ports of Philadelphia, the ports of New York, ports in New Jersey expand their operations. So this tragedy is going to touch a lot of people that have to do with the naval community. It'll either touch them in the way of traffic. It'll touch them probably in the short term in the way of higher costs for goods as those goods go to different places. So yeah, it's not just a Baltimore story. It will end up being probably a larger maritime story.
Yeah. And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, if you're an Annapolitan or come back to Annapolis a lot, we are on the cusp of building a second span of the Bay Bridge across to Queen Anne's. So something to be very informed by. You know, the Key Bridge was built in the 70s. My grandfather helped build the Bay Bridge back in the 50s, I believe. You know, so definitely something to keep an eye on. And I know that a lot of citizens out there became immediately concerned that this could be something that informs terrorists in the future for how to paralyze the U.S. economy. But definitely something to keep your eye on. And something tells me that Naval Academy alumni interface in this entire story is not done. We will continue to play a role, as we do all over the world, in problem solving for this particular thing. Hey, before we get to Jen Donahoe, I did want to say that the reason I brought her up with regard to Shipmate Magazine is that I really did want to get a shout out to Jimmy DeButts, Jackie Furton, the rest of the Shipmate staff. Great article on page 16 in this month's Shipmate. When it hits your mailboxes this week, ladies and gentlemen, establishing a special bond. We feature several married alumni from different eras, from different times, just several great vignettes about what it's like being married to a fellow alumnus. Pick up that Shipmate magazine. If you don't get Shipmate, let us know. If you don't want to get Shipmate via the paper copy and you just want to get it online, we've been putting a bunch of stuff out on social media about how you can opt out of getting the paper copy and just read the online issue when it comes out right here at the beginning of the month. So let's talk to one of those married alumni. Here's our interview with Jen Donahoe of Mills Fine Wine and Spirits in Annapolis.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are starting off our alumni interview segment in style with the class of 94's Jen Donahoe, who just quipped right before I hit record, "I can't believe you like talking." Well, I'll tell you what, whether she likes talking or doesn't like talking, Jen Donahoe has now become, in the aftermath of her great career as a midshipman, her career in the fleet, now as a small business owner in Annapolis, the owner, co-owner with her husband, Jerry, who's also a member of the class of 94 of Mills Fine Wine and Spirits. Jen, first of all, I won't make you talk too much during this interview. I have to say that we're doing this in Mills during a little wine tasting. I'm not going to say what time of the day it is. But since this is your expertise, I figured that we would do it in here. So walk me through a little bit how it came to be that you are the owner of a liquor store or a fine wine and spirits establishment in downtown Annapolis.
It was really just kind of a random opportunity because we'd sold a different business and we're looking for something else to do. So we were looking at a variety of businesses, and we were looking at a couple different retail shops when this opportunity was presented to us. So we actually didn't know much about wine or the retail liquor industry, but the opportunity presented itself in Annapolis, which was great.
And, you know, Mills Fine Wine and Spirits has been a well-known kind of establishment right here on the corner as you come into the City Dock area for years and years and years. So being, you know, the owner and operator of this business, walk us through what we are about to try, you know, during this wine tasting. Like, what are we looking at? And as we taste this amazing selection that you have here, you can talk a little bit more about the business.
Well, I always think when you're tasting wine, it's really educational and informative to do comparison tastings. So I do this quite a bit. But two totally different areas of Pinot Noir. We have a Burgundy from Beaune by Domaine Taz, and then we have a Pinot Noir from California called Effort from Edna Valley. So these should taste very different. And you mentioned you liked Pinot Noir, so I thought it would be fun to do these two different styles.
So a little bit of the X's and O's of, you know, as I try this, is this the Pinot, like, closest to us?
Well, they're both Pinot.
Oh, or the the Beaune.
Yeah, this is the Beaune. This is the Burgundy.
Is there a particular time? I know that January is probably a crappy time to own, you know, a fine wine and spirits place because everyone is doing dry January. What are some of the, like, behind the scenes, inside baseball nuances of owning, you know, or being in the alcohol and wine business?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's some things that are consistent, and then there's some things that are always changing. So, yeah, I mean, January is consistently a terrible month. There's people that, you know, do dry January, and which is quickly followed by Lent, where people might give up wine or drinking. But other patterns are more changing. Like there is a decrease in wine consumption now. Some younger people are opting more for cocktails, or ready-to-drink cocktails is also a growing category. But you know, I always think that wine is—it's not going to go away. Wine and food, to me, are a quintessential part of life and quality of life. So. You know, we'll always have a great wine selection here.
The wine selection here, you know, very popular, and your support of your alma mater has always been very significant, from, you know, providing wine to the superintendent's house for receptions there, or working with NABSD to support functions around the yard. You know, it brings me back to your origins as a midshipman. How did you end up at the Naval Academy, and now you find yourself, you know, in the later stages of life, as your kids are going off to college, still supporting the academy and living around it? I'm interested to know how you even ended up in Annapolis as a student.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of crazy. I think, I wanted to be, when I was in high school, I thought I wanted to be a pilot. I didn't end up becoming a pilot, but I did, I saw Top Gun. I thought that was really cool. I thought it could be, great to be a pilot. And I always gravitated towards math and science classes. So, I took a couple years of calculus, a couple years of chemistry. I was in the chemistry club that met at the local nuclear plant every Thursday night.
Whoa, Nerd Fest. All right, I love it.
I know, major nerd. But yeah, I applied and I got in. I'd never visited, so I mean, it was quite a shock when I, reported for a plebe summer. Didn't really know what was going on, but I adapted.
As you had to.
So I mean, being at the academy is tough, but it was also a really great experience, and I really, really enjoyed my time in the fleet. I knew I didn't want to do it forever, but I learned a lot the 5 years I was in, and I wouldn't trade that experience for the world.
Well, like any smart Naval Academy grad, you chose to be a surface warfare officer, which is where all the finest officers hail from. And you went out to San Diego, right? Do
Yes.
you still utilize now, like as a small business owner, it's not like you have to get like fan room counseling with Pat, but you manage a staff and you manage kind of a rotational staff that's not dissimilar to junior enlisted sailors, but it walk me through a little bit as we move on to the, I think this is the effort.
Yeah, California.
Walk me through like what you've learned as a surface warfare officer and how you apply those concepts of leadership, not only as a parent to, three teenagers, which is a challenge, or is Will now 20?
No.
No, so you still have three teenagers. How do you apply that as a parent and as a small business owner?
Well, I always laugh about, being a junior officer on a steamship in the engineering department, made having three
Ooh,
children
good.
under three, the sleep deprivation is real. So when I had three babies and 3 years, I was like, this is still not as bad as being as sleep deprived as you are as a junior officer. But yeah, again, I always say what's consistent, what you learn, at the academy, it's all about people. I kind of categorize it as the integrity piece and then also the priority piece. Shipmate self is something that, it's something that you could apply to any part of your life. And if you put the organization and the people before yourself, things fall into place. So, yeah, I think that never changes.
Well, and again, I think you learn so much as a SWO that continues to give back to you as you proceed through life. For you, being back here so close to the academy and staying involved, and here we are, we're celebrating Women's History Month. You as a small business owner, I wanted to talk to you about your experiences, but you were still at the academy in the very early 90s during a time that assimilation, which had taken place from 1976 to 1980, was still not that far off. How do you view the change of the culture at the academy vis-a-vis women?
Yeah, I mean, I do remember, my parents always encouraged me. My dad always encouraged me. I had very strong female role models in my family. And I do remember, when I came to the academy, there were definitely people that didn't want you there, and that was a shock to me. I'd never experienced that, and I was very surprised that any of those attitudes existed. But it wasn't everyone, and even if some people felt that way, overall, you're accepted, you find your group, you find your people, and I actually overall had a great experience. And then when I reported my ship, I mean, I was nervous because in 1994, they repealed the combat exclusionary law. So we were, me and a handful of other women were the first reporting to our ship. And I didn't know what to expect. But I mean, I had a great experience. I mean, I worked for this, LDO commander that, you would think he might not have the best attitudes towards women, but he was actually very, he said inappropriate things. Like if something was broken, he would say it was tits up or something, which I was like, what?
What
I didn't
does
even know.
tits up
I didn't
mean?
even know what it meant. But at the end of the day, he actually was did not care if I was a woman or my race or anything. He really wanted people to work as hard as they could and give as much as they could, and that's all he cared about.
I used to say that all the time when people would ask me about being a SWO, and at a time when people were asking about the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, or anything like that. And I think what I always said, or I know that I always said this, and I've always believed it, is that when you're a SWO and you talk about the sleep deprivation, and you talk about like how you're going from watch to standing in front of your division to doing your collateral duties, back to watch, early chow for watch reliefs, it goes into this cycle. You don't have time to wonder
Exactly.
whether someone is gay or straight. You don't have time to wonder if they're a woman or not a woman. It really doesn't matter. It's the most asexual environment I've ever been a part of because you're all so effing busy.
Exactly. That was my experience as well. I mean, I had the auxiliaries division on the Tarawa, which was a big job on an aging ship. And so we literally were, it was everyone put, everyone worked together and it was a very diverse group, and I think we made it work.
Well, talking about making it work, and we're almost out of time here, but I do want to ask you about the challenges of owning this business, particularly in the last 5 years. Number one, owning a business in downtown during COVID, and how that affected you and how you overcame. But then also owning a business, I have been here with you guys and laid sandbags, when we expect flooding in downtown. Walk the listeners through, not only should this be every alumni's favorite and preferred location when they come into town for their libations, for reunions or whatnot, but they should consider the fact that this is right in the heart of sea level rise, and that is going to affect you as a small business owner. Walk us through those two challenges. Let's start with sea level rise.
Yeah, I mean, we're fortunate that we watch the tides and the storms and everything pretty carefully, and there's a lot of nuisance flooding, as it's called, which has gone from maybe 4 instances a month a year, 20 years ago to, 30 to 40 a year now. But being on this side of the street, we are quite a bit higher than our Dock Street counterparts. They have some serious flooding issues quite a bit more often than we do. But we've had 2 instances where it's come very close to coming into Mills, but has not. So we've been lucky so far, but it has flooded before. In the 2000s, with a hurricane previously. But, yeah, it's nerve-wracking. It's not easy to sleep during those, hurricane. They know, they're pretty good at predicting what's going to happen.
And I know that like Mayor Buckley and the city of Annapolis have talked a lot about, not only, beautification and business efforts, down, in front of Latitude and down toward the water more, but, of doing, something to mitigate sea level rise in downtown. Have you heard anything about, stuff on the horizon there?
Oh, definitely. I feel like Mayor Buckley's doing a great job, and they have committees. We're always invited to be part of, the meeting when we can make it, and they try to include business owners as much as possible. They try to get, feedback and input, certainly. But yeah, I think they're putting together a lot of great ideas. I think Annapolis is going to be a better place going forward, and I'm very optimistic about the future.
As you should be. I'll ask really quick before we go out, how much of a nightmare, although I think COVID probably drove people toward wine and alcohol a little bit more, but what was that like,
Yeah, I
as a
mean,
business owner down here? It's hard now, like 4 years later, and we just passed the anniversary. March 13th was the day that the world ended, and so
yes.
we just passed this up 4 years later. What was that like for you
Oh,
guys?
it was crazy. I mean, it was, I mean, it was good for Mills, but it was also challenging. We had to, we had these huge surges where people were fearing they were going to shut down liquor stores, and so we would have these, huge rushes people to buy alcohol because they were concerned they wouldn't be able to buy it for who knew how long.
Yeah.
They ended up never closing retail liquor, but and then also our delivery business surged, which was great for us because we've been trying to promote delivery and we know we can do delivery. We really are, we've figured it out. We're good at it. We can deliver, usually in the Annapolis area, same day, usually within the hour. We, are the kind of Amazon of alcohol delivery in Annapolis, I like to say.
That's a perfect way to go out, actually.
Yeah. But anyway, it encouraged, because of all the limitations, because people didn't want to travel and didn't want to go into stores, it encouraged people to try delivery. And, we still have people that continue to use the delivery service. I think it's super convenient. But if we hadn't had COVID, it's really hard to get people to change buying patterns and shopping patterns. So they might never have tried it if it weren't for that circumstance. And again, COVID was challenging because, we have customers that are elderly, certainly, and are compromised health-wise. We have employees that we wanted to make sure stayed healthy. Just managing all of that was certainly a challenge, as it was for any business owner. But, we made it work.
Well, I'll tell you what, as we go out here, at the Amazon of alcohol delivery locations in Annapolis, my favorite was the Bone. Retailing here in the store for $49.99, the effort was very good as well. That's $31.99. But I'll tell you what, every selection in here is amazing. If you want great staff picks, come on in the Mills. Talk to Jerry and Jen, both 94 grads. But Jen, I'll give you the last word as we polish off our vino, and thank you so much for being so hospitable.
Oh my gosh.
What is it about the Naval Academy for you? Take us out with why the Naval Academy is a special place.
I think, because it imbues the ideals I talked about earlier, the shipmate self. I mean, my daughter is going to a service academy this summer. I'm very excited for her to have that experience. You're surrounded by people that are very good people, and most of them are very good at something or pretty good at most things. So, and then you're usually charged to do something that you really have no business doing. A 24-year-old person driving a steamship in the middle of the night in the Indian Ocean, what could go wrong?
Exactly.
But I mean, that's what's great about the academy is, opportunities to have immense levels of responsibility at a young age, meeting people that are great people. And that's, to me, what it's all about.
I love getting these perspectives from different voices. Jen Donahoe from the Class of 94, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for opening Mills Fine Wine and Spirits to me. I've been in here, during sandbag operations during COVID, but never at 9 in the morning for a wine tasting. Totally worth it. Please, if you're an alumni out there or an Annapolitan, please make Mills Fine Wine and Spirits your preferred location. Jen, thank you so much for your time, and
Thank
we
you,
will
John.
see you next time. All right,
Cheers.
we are out. All right, Chris, awesome interview with Jen.
Really interesting perspective there, not only in terms of what COVID did to that industry, but how they continue to support the Naval Academy. Jerry and Jen, really enjoyed that conversation with her. And a little shout out to them. If you're coming in to Annapolis for commissioning week, and commissioning week as we record this is really only 6 to 7 weeks away now. That is incredible. But every year Mills does a great thing by getting those bottles of Woodford Reserve and putting the class crest of that graduating class on the back. This year's would obviously be class of 2024. So if you're going to do that, which is a fantastic gift for your graduate, please go to Mills Fine Wine and Spirits. Let's get right to our interview with Kylie Sullivan. Kylie, I'm just saying it, Chris, and I know we say it during the interview, probably one of the youngest head coaches in the history of Naval Academy sports. But more than that, she is just such a fantastic mentor and a great person. It's great to have her out there at the club at Greenberry Point. Let's talk to Kylie Sullivan. We are exiting Women's History Month. We have had a great opportunity to talk to female grads, women across the alumni space over the past month, but we're going to close the month pretty strong by talking to the new Division I varsity head women's golf coach at the U.S. Naval Academy, Kylie Sullivan. Kylie is a graduate of Oakland University, so if you paid any attention during the first round of the NCAA tournament, ladies and gentlemen, she very happily dispatched a very high-ranking team in the NCAA tournament. But Kylie is also a very recent graduate of Oakland and the brand new appointed golf coach at the Naval Academy, effective in January 2024. Your return guest, Kylie, thank you so much for joining us. Catch us up with how things are going.
Yeah, thank you for having me back. Things are going really well. You know, so in January, I was officially named the head coach of the women's golf team, and we've been off to a really good start this spring season. Got a couple tournaments under our belt, looking for a couple more that we've got coming up, and it's been a really good start so far.
So in case no one heard our interview with you last year, and I don't want to put you on the spot or make too much of a deal of this because I think it erodes your credibility, of which you have a lot, but you are young. How old are you, Kylie?
I'm 26. Yep.
26 years old, and the newly hired head golf coach for the women's team at the U.S. Naval Academy. We don't know with certainty whether you're the youngest ever D1 head coach at the Naval Academy in its history. Like, Chris and I are, you know, our own historians. We'll just say for the purpose of the next 10 minutes that you are the youngest ever hired head coach in Naval Academy history. But the women that you coach are going off into a similar challenge that you walked into in January, which is at a very young age, you were asked to be a head coach, at a very good institution for a very good golf program that was really just built by Nadia with your assistance as her assistant. What does it mean to you that you are coaching these young ladies to go out and go into the Navy and Marine Corps and be leaders of other men and women at the age of 22, 23, 24, the same way that you're being asked to lead them on the golf course at the age of 26. I find a lot of similarity there.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of things that kind of parallel there. And it's really just an honor that, you know, Mr. Gladchuk and the athletic department entrusts me with this and feels that I, you know, can lead a program like this with so many people who are going to go out to do great things. And it's really an honor to be able to say, you know, I helped coach these young ladies. And I think that my age sometimes honestly helps me relate to them a little bit. And then I think they can see that, you know, I think that they can see that, like you said, I'm at a young age, I'm leading and they're going to be doing the same thing. And I think it allows us to kind of relate and really bond together as a team. It really is just an honor to be able to coach these young ladies and to be a part of such an incredible institution.
Kylie, we've kind of transformed our approach on the podcast. I think when you came on last, we were a sports podcast. Now we're talking more to the broader alumni network. And as John said, thank you very much for joining us for a second time. How about the alumni resources that you are able to draw on? I mean, as John said, it's a fairly young program. And you know, when you look at all the other sports, are you able to pull on some of the, you know, the past Navy golf alumni to help when appropriate? What sort of support are you getting outside of the program?
Yeah, absolutely. We have such an incredible alumni base, not just from the women's team, but from the men's team and also just the Naval Academy itself. I mean, I think, you know, they always say it's the great, you know, biggest, greatest fraternity in the world. And I think that that's absolutely true. We just got back from our spring break trip out to Monterey, where we met so many great alum and supporters of the team who have always supported us through Friends of Navy Golf or different donations or just different ways that they show their support. And so it's really, I'm very lucky. They make that side of my job incredibly easy because they want to be involved. You know, it's such an incredible program and it's such a great institution that you just want to continue the success of that. And then we've seen that through our donors and it's been really awesome. And it's kind of neat. It's inspired the girls even, you know, after our event out in California, I had a girl come up to me and said, you know, seeing all of these alum and all of these supporters makes me want to give back when I'm done, when I leave the program. And I think that that's what we want to see, you know, just kind of continuing to pass it on and pay it forward. And that's what we're looking for. And we're very lucky here.
What does the typical Navy women's golfer, what is their pedigree coming in? Are they all recruited? Is it some recruited, some have golf experience? I have to say, I really don't know because the program is so young. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, the types of athletes that you have on the team?
Absolutely, yeah. So we recruit just like any other Division I golf program does. We look for a high caliber golfer who has a lot of great tournament experience and has a pretty good pedigree there, competitive, you know, in the competitive sphere. But then obviously we want to make sure that we have well-rounded individuals who are going to perform well in the classroom as well. And so as a coach and as when I'm recruiting, I'm kind of looking for that, you know, can they balance, right? That's one of the biggest things that we talk about in the recruiting process is time management, balance. I stress that I believe in that fully as a coach. I'm not going to come out here and say it's golf, golf, golf. Like I try to let them know I understand that we have a lot going on here and they have a lot on their plates. And so as a coach, I make sure that I try to balance it, but I'm also looking for recruits who can balance it. But we have some really fantastic recruits coming in. We've got couple 2024s that are going to be coming in. I'm excited for some 25s. And then before we know it, the class of 26 is going to be open. So we're rolling and the recruiting classes are looking really good. And the freshmen we have this year have been fantastic. So it's definitely headed in a great direction. So I'm excited.
Well, last question for me. What does the year look like for a Navy women's golfer, right? I mean, the summers, I mean, they're not, you know, you're not spending the whole summer playing golf. You're off doing cruises. How do you mitigate that in the golf world? We've talked to other sports and we've talked to other athletes, other coaches and other athletes that have kind of given us their perspective on their respective sports. But what does the year look like for a Navy women's golfer?
Yeah, no, that's a great question because it is different, right? We have a, we don't get to have that same summer that a lot of programs do. So throughout the summer, you know, they'll do their trainings and then during leave, hopefully they get a little bit of golf in, but really it's once we get back, we hit the ground running and we work really hard in the fall. You know, we're going to play 4 to 5 events in the fall. Typically we've got our off season where we continue to work a lot, thankfully for our amazing indoor facilities here, we get to spend a lot of time in those, which is great during the off season. Then we roll right into the spring and we play, you know, 5 events in the spring as well. So for that whole school year, we're working. You know, we call it off season. It's not a whole lot of downtime. We're still working through that. And we're still, you know, the girls are constantly practicing on their own and we're having, you know, some volunteer team practices, everything like that. But unfortunately, during the summer, you know, it's not the same summer schedule that a lot of programs have. But I think that that just makes what our girls do even more impressive when they come back in the fall and they can go out there and they're tournament ready. It shows, it really speaks to the caliber of golfers that they are and the level of just raw talent that they have because they don't have to spend 8 hours every single day during the summer practicing. They have it just within them. They are so talented.
What's your biggest challenge been, Kylie? You know, I know that there are probably a bunch, but you already had a little bit of an acumen about the team and the experience at the Naval Academy, but as you know, took that extra step, as you got that head coaching job, you know, where have you found you've been pressed outside of your comfort zone the most?
You know, it really hasn't been too uncomfortable. I would say it's just each day, you know, kind of learning new things. Every day I'm taking it and I feel that I'm learning something new every day. I'd say the biggest challenge is still just trying to make sure we're having super effective, efficient practices. And I'll tell you, this year we haven't been very lucky with the weather. So that's been a bit of a challenge, not going to lie, is the weather that we've had this year has made practicing a little bit tough. But I think every day, you know, I'm just trying to learn something new, just like the team. You know, I try and preach, you know, getting 1% better every day. That's all we can ask for. If you're learning something or you feel that after at the end of the day, you gain something from the day, that's positive. And I try to live by that as well. So there have been, you know, little challenges here and there, but nothing that has been like glaringly, you know, just a really hard challenge. It's just been day by day, learning new things every day.
Well, last one for me, and I'm going to come back to Women's History Month. The Naval Academy very famously has, you know, the number one, is the number one school in the country in terms of the availability of D1 varsity sports, even more than Ohio State or Stanford. And I think when I was the public affairs officer there, Chet used to say that based on the number of women at the Naval Academy and the number of sports, that 40% of the brigade, if you were a woman, 40% played a Division I varsity sport, which is phenomenal to me.
Yes.
So there's an incredible opportunity at the Naval Academy. Service academies writ large, certainly, but an incredible opportunity at the Naval Academy, not only to be a leader, but to be an athlete. So for you, as a female head coach, you've seen the culture at Oakland, you've been an assistant at Ferris State, now here at Navy, what does it mean to you to be a part of the shaping of female athletes in such a fertile environment with so much opportunity?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's really, really great. And not only, you know, are there so many, but we're the only service academy that has a women's golf team. So this is kind of a very unique experience because I'm the only coach of a female of a female team at the service academies here. So that's pretty neat. But, you know, I think what's so neat about it is that there's so many opportunities for them to not only grow as golfers, but to just grow as individuals. And you see it. You really do see that on the course. You see them obviously becoming better players, but you see them just becoming better leaders. You see them becoming incredible students. They learn. There's so many amazing things that they learn here, and I'm learning from it too. You know, it's pretty neat when they're talking about the PRT and everything that they have to do to get ready for that. That's one of my goals now, is I want to pass the PRT, you know? So I think that's so neat to kind of grow with them. But the Naval Academy is really amazing. And I think it's so important for the women here that they have the opportunity to play Division I athletics. I don't think there are many things in life that help form you as an adult and as a member of society as Division I athletics does. It teaches you how to be a part of a team. It teaches you the value of hard work. It teaches you the value of time management and organization, and also just so fun. And so I think that so many people, so many women here especially, have the opportunity to do that. And it's something I'm very proud to be a part of.
Well, I'll tell you what, Kylie, for the purposes of this podcast, you are the youngest ever head coach in the history of the U.S. Naval Academy. And I know as we go out, I'm going to give you one last choice. What are you more excited about this summer? Your favorite and my favorite team, the Denver Broncos, eating $85 million of debt money from Russell Wilson, or you getting married? What are you more excited about?
Well, I was happy to see Russell Wilson hit the road there, not going to lie. I am looking forward to what the Broncos do, but I think I'm maybe a little bit more excited for my wedding coming up. So can't wait.
Well, Kylie, congratulations on getting the job. Congratulations on your upcoming nuptials. And thank you so much for being part of the mentorship base, the leadership base that benefits, directly benefits the women and the men of the U.S. Naval Academy. And thank you for being our guest today.
Well, thank you for having me, and I appreciate all you guys do.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, Kylie Sullivan of the Naval Academy Women's Golf Team. We're going to go to break. When Chris and I come back, we're taking this baby out. This is Sing Second. All right, Chris, awesome talking to Kylie. Also a great interview with Jen Donahoe, as I mentioned before. But let's stick with golf as we take this out. It was announced just this past week that your friend and mine, friend of so many people here, Pat Owen, is retiring. Pat was elevated to the director of Navy Golf here in the last 2 years, stepping down as the men's head coach after, I think it was close to 30 years in charge, a graduate of Johns Hopkins University, just a mainstay, and an example of what being a good Naval Academy person is all about. He isn't a graduate, but he has bled blue and gold his entire life. Chris, I think someone who's a lot more a lot more eloquent in their remembrances and honorings of people like you, you might be a better person to contextualize what Pat Owen has meant, but just a great loss for the Naval Academy and Naval Academy athletics. That Pat Owen, effective June 1st this summer, will retire as the director of Navy Golf.
Yeah, I mean, I remember Pat, you know, seeing him as somebody that when I would go over to the golf course as a mid, would always have a smile on his face, would chat with you, going back as a lieutenant. And then now, since we've had this podcast, getting to know him real well. I mean, you, of course, as a member of the Naval Academy Golf Club, see him all the time. You've built a special bond with him. But I mean, I have never heard someone say a cross word about Pat. I mean, he is just, he's always got a smile on his face. He's always got, you know, there with quick wit, whether it's an event that the golf club is putting on or whether it's just, you know, seeing him when you're in there to pick up a piece of gear. I mean, just what a great guy. And to think about the number of mids from the golf team to just recreational golfers that he has impacted, it's eye-watering. He will be missed, but I mean, I'm happy for Pat. I mean, good for him to be able to enjoy his family and friends. You know, I don't know if he'll retire permanently or if he'll do something else, but really happy to see what the next chapter brings for him.
Yeah, shout out to Big Cat Pat Owen. Very loved, will be very missed, and we will have an interview with Pat Owen before we get to the end of this pod year, which will be right there during commissioning week. I can't believe that that's already here. Some other awesomeness that took place up at Greenberry Point this weekend. Before Saturday, ladies and gentlemen, the Star Series with Army stood at 9-9-1. We were dead even and really looking uphill at a tough road to win this Star Series. Women's lacrosse is definitely doing well, but they are without Ava Jovino and will be without Ava Jovino for the entire year. She has a season-ending injury. So women's lacrosse will have a tough time against an Army team bringing a lot of people back. Men's lacrosse, well, the Army lacrosse team on the men's side is only ranked number one, so that looks like an uphill battle. And you've got a brand-new coach for baseball, but baseball's looking pretty good after sweeping a little weekend series here in the Patriot League. But man, Chris Cervello, we really needed women's tennis on Saturday up at Tose to get that star win. It was neck and neck. They were down 2-1 after doubles, got into the singles, and it was down to the last two matches, both of which went to deciding third sets. And when I texted you, Chris, on Saturday morning, or I think it was Saturday afternoon at this point, Navy was down in both of those matches in the third set. And if they would have lost those two matches, they would have lost the star. But true to form, they came back. They won both of those matches. Navy wins the star in women's tennis, and now they're up 10-9-1. What a nice day for women's tennis, Chris.
Indeed. And, John, it was hard to imagine us winning the Star Series without this this match. And so the women tennis – mids got it done. What's the next one? Is it women's lacrosse?
No, men's. And so big men's weekend this weekend, men's and women's track and field up at Army.
That's great.
So that'll be big. And then April 13th is women's lacrosse here at Navy, men's lacrosse up at Army. That'll be big. And then at the end of April is when we have baseball.
Yeah, so help me out. If we win both the track meets, we can tie, right? Is that we can do no worse than a tie? Is that
if we win both of the track meets, we end up at 12-9-1 in the series with just four competitions left. men's and women's lacrosse, men's tennis on April 20th.
That's right,
and then baseball. So, you know,
we need three.
We can sweep men's and women's track and field, but then we're going to need one of those last four, and all four of those are going to be tough.
Yeah,
so men's and women's track and field, permission granted to get a sweep this weekend.
Yeah, those are the two that I feel the best about. I do feel better about men's lacrosse. Yes, I know Army's number one, but I mean, a great win against Colgate for the men. I think they're number 10 ranked, Colgate is what I saw. So the you know, roller coaster that is men's lacrosse continues to go up and down. So maybe we can ride a little bit of momentum into that that Star Series. And you know, Cindy Timshel and the women, you know, even without Ava Yovino, what an amazing win that would be.
Yeah, I think we've got some excitement coming down the pike here in April. I'm always excited to see April get here. We've got great podcasts lined up in April, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to do a series from the croquet match on April 13th. We've got some great friends of the pod. We're going to go back to Army-Navy game days of yore by talking to Rob Hubert, who's coming to town this weekend, Chris. So please pray for my liver. Dr. and Mr. Hubert, I think are both coming this weekend. So I will pass along your
another great Naval Academy couple.
Exactly. Yeah. In fact, we're gonna follow up this whole thing by talking to both of them together. You know, and hopefully that keeps Rob from poisoning my liver with martinis. Before we go out, ladies and gentlemen, two more things. I always love it when the Naval Academy gets great press. If you picked up the Wall Street Journal last week and into the weekend and check our social media and our website, we've got the story posted there. But the Wall Street Journal did a spotlight on top colleges for high-paying careers in finance, tech, and consulting. You should not be surprised that the Naval Academy is up there. I mean, number one, you're graduating without any school loans. That's kind of big. You're graduating with an incredibly good education and a Bachelor of Science. You have immediate leadership experience out there. And then usually as part of your Naval career, ladies and gentlemen, you're able to get a really good secondary education or graduate level education that immediately, even if you only do 5 years in the Navy, immediately thrusts you into some really high paying and important jobs. We were really happy to work with the Wall Street Journal on this particular story. We were able to get them a grad, Anthony Pinto from the class of 2014. He was featured in the consulting section. He's only 31, and he's a consultant at a contracting firm called Systems Planning and Analysis. He works on projects for the Navy, obviously parlaying his experience and engineering education at the Naval Academy and experience in the fleet into a really good consulting job. Please read that article. And then lastly, Chris, this is important, and I want to get your thoughts on this before we go out. NBC Nightly News, Courtney Kuby, friend of ours, did a great story on our first ever female brigade commander at the Naval Academy, Julianne Galena, from the class of 92. She is now one of the deputy directors at the Central Intelligence Agency. Courtney was able to come out to Annapolis, interview Julianne here at the Flugel Alumni Center, and also do a great sit down with her in Memorial Hall, which was featured in this NBC Nightly News story. Chris, I'm sure you saw it, but thoughts on, as we close the door on Women's History Month, from Julianne Galena to Mary McElroy, who we talked to during African American History Month, to Jen Donahoe, small business owners, people still in the fleet. You know, it makes me feel proud how far the Naval Academy has come, not just in advancing, the conversation and the narrative about women in combat. And I do know that there have been a couple of women in the SEAL screener this past spring. But, you know, watching Julianne Galena up there on NBC Nightly News this past weekend just made me so proud that, I'll tell you what, from 1976 to today, the Naval Academy has come a long way. I know it has to come a lot further, but it's got to make you proud.
Yeah, John, it does make me proud. I mean, you know what? I was born in 1976, right? So across my lifetime, to see the progress that not just women in general have made. I mean, you know, the three greatest people in my life, my mom, my wife, and my daughter are all women. So, you know, we know the special role that women play in the family, professionally, in society. But then to look at the institution that we love and to see how much progress women have made, and to see that NBC News story, and then to think about my company mates, the women that were, you know, in my battalion, in my regiment, you know, Amy Morrison when I was a plebe, now Amy Gillen was the brigade commander, to think about the Naval Academy graduates that, you know, positively affected our Navy career, to think about the soup. I mean, it's just, yeah, I mean, I'm glad we took that opportunity to, you know, highlight Women's History Month. But I mean, you know, Naval Academy Women's History really is every month, and we'll continue to tell these stories.
We will indeed. And it's almost like they're non-stories now. I think many, many years ago, people would have said, oh, we have a female academic dean and provost. We have a female superintendent. You know, what will happen? Well, you know what? Nothing's happened, ladies and gentlemen. It's just business as usual here, creating leaders of character and consequence for the nation, the highest levels of command, citizenship, and government. And it's been our pleasure to be able to talk to Samara Firebaugh on this podcast. We're working with the Public Affairs Office to get Vice Admiral Davids on the pod before we go out. And on this particular pod, it was just so great to talk to Jen and Kylie Sullivan about their roles and the roles that they've played making the Naval Academy a better place. So I think that's a great place to put a pin in it. Say farewell to March. Say hello to April. April means a lot of Orioles talk from us, ladies and gentlemen, so get on the bus. I'm not going to go full Pat McAfee on you, but you know, this is the way it is. This is our podcast. We're going to talk some of those. But for Jen Donahoe and Kylie Sullivan and Chris Cervello, I am John Schofield. Thank you so much again for joining us on the Sing Second Pod. We will see you next week. We are out.